What is up, everyone? It's your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you here alongside David Ungar for another edition of the Four Corners Podcast. Four Corners Podcast is a part of the Chairshot Radio Network here on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. And Dave, I gotta thank you already because your background reminded me which podcast I was on.
Yeah, I figured I would just change a few things around this week, but there you go.
Sometimes I get confused. I flip-flop between, recording on a Sunday, Bandwagon Nerds, and Four Corners. It can be challenging at times.
This is very true. You can get very sideways very quickly if you're not careful.
Yeah, and we are going to talk. We got this week. The week that was in the world of sports is a big week. We had a consequential week in the world of college football. The divisional rounds of the playoffs are over. We now have an AL and NLCS matchup that is going on. My World Series prediction is dead, so we've got that. And hockey started. Dave, hockey has kicked off, and so I saw that your Caps couldn't beat the Bruins for their opener, so I'm sorry about that.
We got one back last night, so they took care of the Islanders.
Looked
pretty
good.
They haven't looked bad. I mean, if you want to talk a little hockey at the outset, I mean, Swayman stole the opener for Boston, and that's going to happen, but no, they look pretty good last night. I think, I think Ryan Leonard is going to have a pretty good season. Ovi hasn't scored yet. The sky is falling sort of situation. But yeah, I've only caught a little bit of it. I know your Blues got off to a bit of a rough start.
Yeah, they notched their first win, I want to say on Saturday. So we got that
okay,
going.
So
they looked like dog shit, to be blunt. First game of the season, they lost 5-0, and Just not what I was hoping for not what any fan hopes for to start a season, right? Like nobody wants their team to get smoked 5-0 to kick off a season. It's just, Jordan Binnington, where were you, bro? So I will say this, sweet intro video to kick things off to War Pigs. That was nice. I know I shared that with you and DJ on one of our chat threads because, for those of you who don't know, myself, DJ from the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, and Dave, we have our own little internal chat where we talk basically classic metal bands to current metal bands and then occasional Lord of the Rings memes. That seems to be primarily what we share in that thread. And with Ozzy's passing, it seems like the Blues were given the blessing by his family to use Sabbath and play some War Pigs. They have Ozzy's famous St. Louis Blues jersey mugshot in the background and have a garage band covering the tune while the players are, being hyped up as part of their hype video. Now, I haven't seen the rest of the entrance, like what it looks like on the ice. I know we are not in the same league as like a Vegas. They really seem to go all out every year. I've been more interested in college hockey because the University of Massachusetts has gotten off to a pretty good start this year. They've got some talent and are a top 10 hockey program in the nation and looking to make some noise in the Hockey East this year. And, they haven't played anybody yet. Games are this weekend, so we'll see what happens.
I see that the Panthers, who the reports of their demise are greatly exaggerated because, Barkov's going to miss the season. Well, they're 3-0. No slowing the defending two-time champions down there.
Yeah, we all know that, first of all, hockey is an 80-plus game season. The first week, I texted you. I'm going to go back to my Blues. I texted you about my Blues. I'm like, Blues equal poop. Sent you the poop emoji. And you were like, it's just one game. And I was like, but it was a bad. It was a bad game. To lose 5-0 is just bad.
I thought we like reverse roles or something. And you were in sky is falling mode and I was like, it's only one game. And
I don't know if I go sky is falling mode. I don't think that's fair, but I do think nobody just don't want to see your team lose like that. Like that's just hideous. So that's really where that came from.
But just looking at the first week, Boston is a surprise, man. No Brad Marchand, but they still got Pasternak. They still got Swayman, who's playing out of his mind early on, and they're off to a really, you know, 3-0. It's like, well, okay, that's a good start. But yeah, it's so hard to say, like, okay, we're two games in.
Right.
You know, what's really going to happen?
You got a game today as we're recording this.
Yeah.
Tonight. You got the Rangers tonight,
Rangers.
So that'll be fun.
Yeah, and the Rangers will be, you know, you got to figure last year was a complete aberration. What their collapse last year was just, they've got too much talent. And, you know, you've got, oh gosh, Shesterkin, their goaltender, who's, of course, right, world class, had a difficult year last year. So it'll be a good litmus test to see where both teams kind of are.
They went back and forth with the Penguins. The Penguins shut them out. They, you know, they lost. And then they turned around and beat the Penguins right after it. So, you know, again, it's early, right? Like, it's early. Hell, we're at that point of year where Toronto is going to win all their games, and we're and I'm going to be suckered into believing in the Toronto Maple Leafs once again. And you know what will happen? They'll lose in the first round in three games. That's not even possible, but they'll find a way to do it.
They actually won't get the fourth game. Yeah, they'll just be like, nah, we've seen enough. You guys are done.
So, Ovi hasn't scored in his first couple games, so everybody in the world is terrible. How many does he need now? I don't even know.
He broke the record. This is all just adding to the record at this point.
How many goals can he get this year?
Well, he's sitting at 897, so 895 broke the record. I think, you know, last year was, and I mean, you know, you look at the tear he was on a year ago. You know, the question is, of course, will the Caps be as good or better this year? They've got more young talent than I thought. I was sitting there thinking, oh, this is an old team. They're at the end of their run, kind of like where Pittsburgh is seemingly, and they're trying to rebuild as well. But I think Ovi getting 30 goals this year is very doable if the Caps stay, you know, if he stays healthy, which of course didn't slow him down last year. But if the Caps can continue to be, you know, there's some good signs from last night. Protas got a couple goals. Ferravari got a goal. Those are two guys who were notably missing from the playoffs, especially Martin Ferravari. Yeah, that Carolina series may not be as lopsided as it was had he played. So it's good to see him back. But yeah, I think Ovi's probably good for 30. Anything beyond that's gravy. If he gets over 30, he's over 900. And yeah, I think when he hits 900, that's going to be a big moment. The next big moment in his career trajectory is nobody's ever done 900. I mean, no one's ever done 895, but 900, that's, you know, I mean, I don't think he's going to get 1,000.
Sure. But, you know, still off to a terrific, you know, anything, like you said, anything from here on now is gravy. Who knows? We'll see what happens. Just like we'll get a better look at the NHL as a few weeks in. It's just, you know, the first few games, you're just watching teams figure themselves out for a little bit. Some teams will be for real right away. We're looking at you, Florida. Some teams, the jury will be out. And then some teams like Chicago will just continue to be Chicago.
Buffalo.
So we'll hold off on that. What I do want to talk about is I want to talk about college football, because this week is probably the We are now, for most teams, at the midway point of their seasons. Teams have played 6 to 7 games. You know, my beloved University of Illinois lost to Ohio State yesterday, 34-16. It was a frustrating game in a way that was different than the loss to Indiana. The loss to Indiana, things went wrong and it snowballed, and you just felt like you never had a chance. Illinois really shot itself in the foot repeatedly. Now, I don't know if they win that game, but they, for a team that's defense had been much maligned, it's secondary struggling to tackle, they played surprisingly well. However, Luke Altmyer throws his first interception of the season on a deflection that, like, it was a little behind the receiver, but it bounces up in the air. Ohio State guy intercepts it to put Illinois down 10-0 just right away. They were down 20-3 at halftime. Just there was a fumble. There were two fumbles, an interception. I think the true low point for me, though, was there were two. Illinois is about to punt the ball away. Kicker is kicking from Illinois' 38-yard line. Illinois' long snapper was out due to injury. The backup comes in. It's a low snap. The kicker goes down on one knee to take it. That's a downed football. And so that downed the snap. Ohio State gets the ball on Illinois' 38-yard line. And the defense, I felt like, did about as well as they could. Ohio State had a short field so many times, and the offense just couldn't get it going. And there was a moment going into the fourth quarter, or into halftime, on that drive, the one drive where Illinois scores, they get 3 points. They drive the ball all the way down to the Ohio State 2. And in consecutive sequences, it was like incomplete pass, run that gets tripped up and stopped, like just a hell of a play by the defensive lineman too. Luke Altmyer on a bootleg kind of scramble, looks like he's got the angle, and the defensive lineman makes a hell of a play. Third down and third and one at the goal line, tied in, false start. Backs it up 5 yards, incomplete pass, no touchdown, have to settle for the field goal. They get the ball to start the second half. They drive the length of the field, score the touchdown. First team to score double digits on Ohio State. The score's 20-10, and it was key. It was like Illinois must get a defensive stop. And they did two things that were, I understand why they did it, but it failed. And I'm not mad that one of the things failed. They kicked it off and wanted them to return it. Illinois' kick coverage, which has been very, very good all season. Basically, when they've done it, they've had teams starting at their own 15. They don't get it done. Guy gets all the way out to the 40 almost. So great field position. Then on a crucial third and five in that first series, they basically did a delayed snap count. So they waited half a beat after the clap before they snapped the football. Illinois was trying to blitz defensive linemen. Offsides, 5 yard penalty, third and one instead of third and five. First down, Ohio State drives, scores a touchdown, goes up 27-10, and then 34-10 before Illinois gets a garbage time touchdown that really didn't mean anything. Ohio State looks really good. Indiana, I told you on this podcast that Indiana was the real deal, and PC Tunney was in the room at the time, but it was before we had finished the podcast, and he's really good about not commenting when he's in the room while we're talking. And he was shaking his head no vigorously when I said that I thought Indiana was at worst the third best team in the Big Ten. I think they're the second best team in the Big Ten at this point. They go to Eugene and they didn't just beat Oregon. Like, they handled Oregon. I gotta double check the score, but it was
30 to 20, I think.
30 to 20. But it was not as close as the score made it look. And, you know, so I think you're going to see Ohio State reasserts itself as number one. Oregon's going to fall down to about seven or eight, because that's what you do after your first loss. I think Indiana's going to be number three behind Miami. Miami didn't play this week. They had a bye week or an off week, so they didn't play. So I think you're going to see Ohio State number one. You're going to see Miami number two. And I wouldn't be surprised if Indiana is number three, even with Ole Miss. And here's why I think they're going to jump all the way up to three. Ole Miss, who's a number four, won 24-21 over Washington State. Not a great team. Oklahoma at number five lost to Texas and looked awful.
Handily. Yeah.
Just awful. So at that point, you're looking at a very reasonable argument for Indiana to leapfrog all the way up to number three.
So let me ask you a few things, because you're the college football expert of the two of us.
I take it back. I forgot about Texas A&M beat Florida by two multiple scores. So maybe they don't leap Texas A&M, because maybe the voters move Texas A&M up to three and Indiana's four.
So what I wanted to ask is, Ohio State's defense looks every bit good enough to
they're
the national champions. They're the national champions a year ago, and they look even better defensively this year. Like, I know, like, Illinois finally got into the end zone, but they'd gone, like, what, 16 quarters without giving up a touchdown up until
they'd gone 16 quarters. It hadn't been since, I think, Texas scored a touchdown in the first game of the season.
Right.
And then the other big thing was no team had scored on them in the red zone all year until Illinois did it twice. The second touchdown was a style points touchdown. It had no meaning by that point. And it was funny, when Illinois had the ball one last time and was trying to, again, just get some style points, Matt Patricia had enough and went back-to-back blitzes, just blew up anything Illinois wanted to do, game over. Like, they just weren't having it. So It was very much, in my opinion, the one legitimate touchdown that Illinois had was the one to open the second half when they ran with some tempo. And that seems to be a possible weakness for this Ohio State team, is that they are very, very good at disguising their coverages, getting guys matched up. But when Illinois went tempo and didn't sub and was running a little more quickly out of those packages, Ohio State struggled to cover them. And that made a little bit of a difference. But if that's the hairs we're splitting with Ohio State, like, they're nasty on the defensive side of the football. And then, oh, by the way, they have two NFL-ready receivers and an NFL-caliber tight end in their receiving core. And Julian Sayin is a very accurate, competent quarterback whose offensive line protected him all day. They're good.
Going to Indiana, I mean, going into Oregon, was it, yes. Isn't it Autzen Stadium?
That's Oregon Stadium. Yep.
Where they hadn't lost in like, what, 60 games or something obscene like that? They
it had is a, one ridiculous. It is one of the toughest places to play in all of football.
It really is. And for Indiana to go, and I understand it was, you know, 2020, and then Indiana pulled away at the end and that sort of thing. But yeah, you're right. That factor of going into that kind of an environment, like up in Oregon like that, and pulling off a victory of that magnitude, it's got to go a long way with the voters. You talked about Texas and you talked about Texas A&M. Is Texas Tech the best team in Texas right now?
They're certainly the, well, it's hard to tell because they're in the Big 12. And the Big 12 is one of the most fun conferences to watch, but it's the hardest to gauge. They're easily the best team in the Big 12. They're the best team I think nobody's talking about. They keep winning. They're clearly in the mix for all this. I think that they're going to be there because I don't know that there's anybody out of the Big 12 who can beat them, especially with Ohio State as banged up and injured as they are. And they just lost this week to Deion Sanders' Colorado team, who's not very good. Texas Tech went all in on talent this year, though. They went all in on NIL. They wanted to make it happen, and so far they have. And you look at that team there, they play fast. They're very exciting, great explosive offense. The defense, I think, is underrated. This, who they beat, who's 4-3, is an explosive team offensively. Jalen Daniels, great quarterback. They, you know, Kansas had a 17-point outburst in the second quarter, and that was it.
Second half,
Texas Tech shut the water off. You know, A&M isn't fancy. They've been beating everybody. Here's the thing. The ACC is going to keep sorting itself out because I just mentioned Ole Miss. Well, Ole Miss has got Georgia next week. And Georgia, I don't know how they do it. They just keep winning. They don't win impressively. They just win. Tennessee beat a game Arkansas. Arkansas fought. It wasn't hard enough, but Tennessee won that. They've got Alabama next week, so that'll sort those two teams out. It's a lot of fun. I think to go back to your Big 12 question, and maybe Utah, but Utah, they've already got one L on their mark, but they mollywalloped Arizona State.
I watched
some of that game, and it was over in the second quarter. It was so brutal. Yeah. So brutal.
Every time Arizona State did anything in that game that looked like they might be dabbling or they come back, man, Utah just shoved it down their throat. Would answer it immediately, just drive down the field. I saw one of these drives, like when it almost got like it was like 24-10 at some point, and Utah just took it right down the field. USC looked impressive against Michigan yesterday.
They did. I agree. There's a guy named Todd Fornelli, and I think he says it best. USC is a completely different team in California. They struggle when they travel, and you saw it against Illinois. Illinois beat them up and should have won that game comfortably, if not for a couple of fumbles inside the red zone at the goal line, literally at the goal line. Illinois probably wins that game by a couple scores and isn't sweating the end and having to kick a game-winning field goal. Their receivers are legit. Maiva is legit as a quarterback. He is a very, very great quarterback. You've got, I'm forgetting his name. There's a wide, their wide receiver. He's a pro. Sorry, Julian Sayin's name is stuck in my head because he's going to be in my nightmares as a quarterback throwing to that Smith kid. And then UCLA kept winning. UCLA convincingly beats Michigan State. I think the other big thing we got, James Franklin and Penn State.
Penn State.
That buyout, and they lost. That buyout's going to happen. They lost to Northwestern by a point.
They lost Drew Allard for the year, didn't they?
Oh, I didn't see that part. I just saw the score.
He's gone for this season is my understanding. I'll look it up, but that's my understanding is that he's, that's season over for Penn State. You know, they're 3-3.
That sucks. For them. Now, even without Drew Aller, Penn State's good enough to beat Northwestern. And to me, it's inexcusable that they lost. Like, it just is. Like, Northwestern is not a great football team. You know, to their credit, they haven't quit the way that Wisconsin has quit on Luke Fickell. They just got shut out by Iowa. Like, and Iowa isn't exactly known as a scoring squad. They are what you would say.
ESPN. ESPN confirms Drew Aller's college career is likely over. Yeah, Franklin said.
Is it just his college career? Because I don't think he is maybe he's a backup. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He has never been an impressive football player, in my opinion. He has been a very good college quarterback for his entire career, and that has really been it.
They're saying that because he's played more than four games in each of the past 4 years, he's got no more eligibility unless the NCAA changes eligibility.
Passes the 5-for-5. So if they pass the 5-for-5 rule, which it seems like they're going to do, 5 years to play, five seasons, he would have another year of eligibility available to him. And if that opportunity happens, he should take it because he will make more money as a quarterback. And I don't think he'll be a quarterback at Penn State. I think it's probably in his best interest to transfer, to be blunt. So I would anticipate that we're going to see Drew Aller in a different uniform. And I think you're going to see James Franklin with a different team as probably either a defensive coordinator or coaching somewhere else. He's a good football coach.
He is. They're having a rough season for I don't know why exactly, but like I look at a vacancy of the team that just upset him a couple weeks ago. UCLA's got a big vacancy sitting out there, and that's
right.
Not a bad fit.
But I just want to point out the moniker Big Game James is there for a reason. His teams don't win big time games. They don't. They're like 4-21. And that is going to follow him no matter how good of a coach he is. They just don't win the big ones. And it's hilarious. I want to say one last thing about Indiana because I think it's really, really funny. People, you got to get it out of your heads that this is your dad's Indiana team. They're good. They're legitimately good. And here's how I know that people haven't gotten out of their heads what Indiana's supposed to be. Is after Indiana beats Oregon, knuckleheads on various sport podcasts, sport news groups, whatever, start tweeting about how Oregon in its last 12 or 14 games is 2-12 against top-ranked teams or Power 4 teams. That is put in place to discredit Indiana by saying Indiana's not good, that Indiana only won because Oregon's not as good as we thought it was. That's bullshit. Oregon is a blue blood program. They have been for years. And Indiana went into their house and beat them. That's it. But because we don't think Indiana belongs at the party, maybe because we don't like Kurt Cignetti, we're shitting all over them. So I think I'm looking forward to seeing Indiana get a second crack at the college football playoff. All right, we're going to take our first commercial break, our only commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk MLB playoffs. We got the ALCS and the NLCS. ALCS starts tonight. NLCS starts tomorrow. I say tonight and tomorrow. By the time you're listening to it, it will have started on Sunday and Monday. But we will have a game under the belt by the time this podcast drops. And Dave and I are going to give our thoughts when we come back. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to the Four Corners Podcast here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of the ChairShot.com.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to the Four Corners Podcast here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com. Make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot for all of your Chairshot swag needs. Dave, I predicted a Phillies-Toronto World Series. I am half right.
B.
Now, I want to start with the National League. Let's cheer.
Well, my Dodgers-Tigers prediction is half still alive.
Half
too,
right, too.
So,
but cheers to the Milwaukee Brewers finishing it off. PC Tunney, congratulations to your team. I texted you when it happened. It's funny because I had texted him before the game started. And I was like, look, man, I'm pulling for your team. I was like, you know, I hope you, I can't remember what I said. Good luck to you and your Brewers today. I'm pulling for them. And then a little bit later, he was like, McGill is starting today. And he gave the shrug emoji. And he was like, if I don't respond until tomorrow, once the game gets closer, don't be offended. And I was like, nah, man, I get that. Like, I've been there. Like, well, I've watched Cardinal games like that. Hell, if you tried to talk to me during the Blues Stanley Cup run, you were begging for trouble. But they get it done. Brewers, that, I'm going to, Mizorowski, or their 19-year-old pitcher that throws 104 miles an hour, three innings of work. Early in that game, because they, you know, McGill was out early. I think he only went an inning. And then it was like Mizorowski, Ashby comes in. They shut down the Cubs lineup. They really couldn't get anything going. I think there was only one true jam at any point. Brewers get a timely home run late in the game to give themselves a 2-run cushion, close it out. Cubs go quietly. You know, it was a bad day for fans in the state of Illinois. You know, going and losing on national television to Ohio State, and then turning around and losing to the Brewers in Milwaukee. It was a home team series all the way through. Over in Philadelphia, you know, that pitcher's miserable for that throw. But you go back and watch it, everybody's pointing to first base.
No.
And that's why that error happens. I've been there. So, you know, your catcher is telling you to go to one and not try to stop the run. And then the guy changes his mind in the middle of the throw and it tries to make a really difficult throw. And you saw why. And then he overthrows it. And I don't even know if the throw gets there, if he gets the guy. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But brutal.
It's a difficult error. And you look at that, and if you've played baseball or something like that, you know, you go into a play and in your head, you know what you're supposed to do. And the right play is to go to first right there every single time. But for some reason, you know, he doesn't play the ball right coming off the bat. He panics and thinks, like you're saying, I don't have time to get this to first. If that throw's online, they've got him dead to rights at home plate, probably.
Maybe.
I mean, it might be close. Maybe. Might be close. But, it's tough, but I mean, look, the Phillies, that's not the only reason they lost that series.
Oh, they didn't hit for shit.
Yeah, the Dodgers are a better team for first and foremost. And like you're saying, the Phillies, other than one great game where Schwarber really took it to the Dodgers, they Bryce Harper was completely absent from the series pretty much. You can't have that. You know, probably right. Your best player on the team. You got to get more production out of Bryce than that. And yeah, you know, because I'm a Nationals fan and he's a former National, there's a part of me that laughs at that whole thing. But at the same time, objectively speaking, Bryce has got to do better. I can't be a one-man team. You're not going to beat the Dodgers like that.
No, and that's the thing is, I think the Dodgers are going to, I long said whoever won the Phillies-Dodgers series was the prohibitive favorite for the National League. I haven't changed that opinion. Sorry, Tony. I think the Dodgers will get it done. There's just too much. There's just too much. You have to be absolutely perfect to beat the Dodgers in the playoffs. And I don't know how you get through that murderer's row of a lineup and that pitching talent to beat them. Unless Clayton Kershaw pitches four games, because it's kryptonite to Superman when Kershaw's on the hill in the playoff game. I don't understand it.
And like you're saying, I think that I'm with you. I think the Dodgers they've got too much talent up and down the lineup. And this is a team that they've been maligned for years about not getting it done in the playoffs. And then last year seemed to really exercise those demons. Now, could they still have a playoff flameout against Milwaukee? Absolutely. That is on the table. But this is a team that now knows how to win. You're talking two world championships in the last 4 years. So the playoff stigma has kind of fallen off a little bit. But yeah, you got Freeman, Ohtani, all, you know, that pitching staff is just, there are no weaknesses with this team other than if they beat themselves. And I mean, right. Milwaukee's a damn good team, a really, really, really good team. But
right.
I'm with you. I think it's the Dodgers.
Well, and I think on the other side, as much as I want a Mariners World Series in the worst way, the Blue Jays and that lineup, I don't know. Even without Bo Bichette, I don't know that the Mariners have enough to get past the Blue Jays, especially when you consider that the Mariners had to go through so many pitchers just literally like a day before, like they got one day off to recover their pitching arms. And, you know, maybe that bullpen's not going to be rested. That's going to be a tough, tough task for the Seattle Mariners. I want it. I want to see Ken Griffey Jr. in the stands with Ichiro and Randy Johnson and Jay Buhner and all those Mariners who have made it to, you know, have not seen that franchise win a World Series. I think it would be great for the city of Seattle. But I don't know, Vlad Guerrero Jr. hits the ball really hard. I did see that, like I said, Bo Bichette is out for the ALCS with a sprained knee. Max Scherzer coming back. Didn't know he was still pitching.
He can still go from time to time.
Now the Mariners do have the likely American League MVP.
Gosh, what the hell's his name? I'm drawing a blank. Cal Rally. Yeah, and Rally's going to have to carry them a long way. I mean, you're talking about, you're going into Toronto, you come off what people are calling one of the greatest decisive ALDS games of all time, you know, and Seattle has a penchant for epic game five sort of situations in the ALDS. But 15 innings to do all that. And you're saying, they went through so many pitchers, you got to go into Toronto, which is as hostile an environment as you can get in baseball right now. And that crowd is electric. I love this ALCS because you've got a squad, Seattle, that's never made it. You got a Toronto team that hasn't been there since 93. Joe Carter, anyone? Sort of thing. So I love the ALCS. I love the matchup. Something different. I think, right now, I think Toronto's got too much. They've got the home field advantage. You just saw a team that really mollywopped the New York Yankees, which is no small task to wipe out the defending AL champions in four games and to close it out in New York, no less. And they should have swept them, but they let game three get away. But I'm with you. I like Toronto probably in like maybe six games or something like that in this series. I'll be pulling for Seattle because I'm like you. I want to see them get to that show for the first time.
I want a Brewers Mariners yeah. World Series. Give me a Brewers Mariners World Series.
I am absolutely with you. I think that'd be great. Or even Brewers Blue Jays wouldn't be. Well, Toronto's won two titles, but yeah, I'm with you. Mariners Brewers would be a really fun, really different series that America can really get encaptured by. I mean, if it's the Dodgers again,
you know,
sure, everybody
would,
down
it
the
would
street
be something
for me
to get
is going to be
captured by if they wouldn't put games on a Friday evening like they
right.
But anyway,
right.
What do I know? I do think Major League Baseball desperately needs the Los Angeles Dodgers in the World Series. That's always going to bring eyeballs.
It helps, and you've got a dynasty in the making over there, and you haven't had that in baseball in a very long time.
Oh, it's easy when there's no salary cap. There's no spending limit.
That's right. It's like me going into any of the video games that I have where I turn the salary cap off and, decisions are easy then. I did this team because I'll just, now it doesn't mean that, with some of the great players, no matter how much I pay them, want to sign with the Washington Wizards, but go figure, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you enjoy you. And we're going to enjoy this playoff series and hopefully our predictions are wrong and we get two teams that have never been in a World Series fighting for their first ever title. Dave, we are coming right up on time, buddy. Tell everybody where they can find you on the Chair Shot Radio Network.
Yeah, you can find me on social media. Yeah, on Blue Sky and on X at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. Please also go and check out the website, attitudeofaggression.com. There's a lot of good stuff going on there. I've revamped the website quite a bit. Facebook.com/attitudeofaggression and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, over on Instagram and on Threads.
And you can catch me on the socials at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. You can catch me every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Monday talking nerdy stuff with Dave and PC Tunney and sometimes Ray Cash and sometimes DJ. It's a good time. Dave's back here with Dave talking sports. And Wednesdays talking wrestling with Greg DeMarco when we feel like it. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Four Quarters Podcast. Come catch us every Tuesday when we cover every base in the world of sports. It's always a lot of fun. You've been listening to the Four Quarters Podcast here on the ChairShot Radio Network, part of the ChairShot. Hello, everyone. It's Patrick O'Dowd. And I bet you thought when I said goodbye on the Four Quarters Podcast that we were done. But literally, after we hit stop, I jump on the social medias and we got to talk about it. James Franklin fired by Penn State after losing to Northwestern 22-21. No starting quarterback. Drew Aller is out for the rest of the year now. And we have a special guest here. We also have PC Tunney with us, fresh off of his Milwaukee Brewer NLDS victory. He looks like he was sweating, y'all, with a 2-run lead, sweating. He looks happy now. But I can just imagine when the Cubs tied it, fuck, every time the Cubs got on base, sweating bullets, losing his mind, getting those strikeouts. Tunney, how are you, man? And Penn State firing James Franklin after losing to Northwestern.
That's surprising, both the loss and the firing, I feel like. The Badgers lost by 37 and didn't score any points, so we can get rid of Fickell very soon. Congrats to the Milwaukee Brewers, yeah. What a great pitching game. One bad pitch from Miz, but it was good to see him come through after that. So hopefully we can hit the ball against the Dodgers and go from there. But he'll land somewhere. Some other program will pick him up. I'll be the first one to say that.
Dave was pushing for a UCLA hire, but if they keep winning, like if it really was just the coach, like I don't know, do you put a 19-year-old Neuheisel in charge? No, I'm just kidding. I don't think that's the right answer. But Dave Franklin out before I give my thoughts.
Yeah, I know we were talking about it, and dude, that happened pretty quick. But yeah, I think if you're a program like Penn State, who was a preseason favorite to challenge for the national championship, you know, the loss to what's that?
They were the preseason number two. They came into preseason number two. They were preseason number. It was Texas number one, Penn State number two. They had all this talent coming back from last year. They had all these guys coming back from a team who won their first round matchup, got bounced in the second round of the college football playoff. There were expectations that this was finally the year for James Franklin to get over the hump.
Weren't they a Final Four last year? Didn't like Notre Dame beat them? I thought Notre Dame beat them in the Final Four.
Maybe they didn't win two games. I can't remember. I know that they finally won at least one game in the college football playoff, and there was a lot of optimism. I was never sold on Drew Aller as a upper echelon quarterback. I feel like he's a very good college quarterback, but he's not the level of some of these other guys. It's that same feeling I have about Arch Manning right now. The only difference is Arch Manning is a sophomore and Drew Aller is a senior. And Aller's development just hasn't happened. Arch is really, he still hasn't played a 12 full games as a starting quarterback at the college level.
He could take big steps next year as a junior.
Very much so.
But I don't think the steps will be big enough for him to come out. I think he's going to be like his uncle Peyton and need to stay 4 years and then maybe even suffer a bad start first year and get with a really good offensive coordinator. Peyton had Tom Moore has most of his career early there. So someone you know, that takes care of him, get the ball out quick, learn the system.
What I was going to say is that this is where, you know, we call it the Big Ten in name only because we know it's really closer to like the Big 18, that sort of thing. And this is where the depth of that conference really screws you over. Because if you're losing to teams like Oregon and Ohio State, that's one thing.
I don't think Patrick the Big Ten is that deep. I don't think the Big Ten is that deep at all.
Because they lost to these lower tier teams like UCLA and Northwestern, who are clearly in the bottom half of the big that really, you can't have that if you're a program like Penn State. Because if you lost to Ohio State, Illinois, Indiana.
They might infuse $2.4 billion into the Big Ten
Yes,
a hedge fund or something.
Something we haven't seen what's going to happen on that. It'll be very interesting to see what that does to the conference if it gets that, if it does go through with that.
Well, I mean, look at what Texas Tech has, like a 50 some million dollar budget this year or something, just
right,
to name one. Just
they're crushing it. Right.
Yeah.
We talked about them earlier as to like, are they the best team in Texas right now?
It's professional sports now.
There are some interesting places where James Franklin can land, some that don't make sense. Like right now, if you just look at, to bring this back full circle, right now, UCLA is open, Arkansas is open, Oklahoma State is open. Those are kind of the big three programs. Any one of them are logical landing spots for James Franklin. I don't know if Arkansas can afford them, because that's the Walton family. They gotta be willing to pay for that. But yeah, he's going to be fine in where he lands. But until he takes a team, like this is where this whole Big Game James moniker that we were talking about earlier on the show before we signed off, he's like 4-21 or 22 in games against ranked, like top five ranked opponents. And that just followed and haunted him. And this year, like I said, ultimately, this year was supposed to be the year. And when you lose to Northwestern, that's a team on quit watch. That's not just a team that's struggling at that point. Drew Aller or no Drew Aller, you should beat Northwestern. They're not good. And for them to lose at home, that's the other thing. This is at State College. So I'm actually not surprised. I don't know if Penn State has a game next week. I don't remember if they've had their bye yet or not. I don't have their schedule up in front of me. Usually firings happen going into a bye week. So it's not, I know they have Indiana coming up though. And like I said, Indiana, they're for real. They went into Eugene and took care of business. So that could have been a chance to save Franklin's job if he had it coming otherwise.
They're at Iowa on Saturday. And then 2 weeks after that, they're at Ohio State. And then they're home to Indiana after that. So those are their next three games in four weeks.
So that's a tough stretch. That was a tough stretch. And when you lose to Northwestern, State folding on the seasons. We will be very interested to see who they bring in to fill that role. Big Ten chaos. I don't believe in any more than I still think Oregon's a good team. No, Indiana is a good team. Ohio State defensively is phenomenal. Offensively, they're good. I want to see what happens when somebody heats up Julian Sain, because he's really not had that happen yet. He hasn't had a team really get in his face. But you've got two NFL caliber wide receivers and, like I said, an NFL caliber tight end to throw to, and solid running backs. They're not great in the running game, but they're solid. They do have a kid named Bo Jackson who they're really excited about. He's a freshman over there at Ohio State. So we'll have to see what happens. But there you have it, folks. A little addendum to the Four Corners podcast. James Franklin out at Penn State. Of course, this is dropping on Tuesday, so it'll be a little bit old news, but I just couldn't let our show end. Like, we ended the show, I jump on socials, and there it was coming out. So, with that said, thank you, PC Tunney, for jumping on and doing a quick little participation on the Four Corners podcast. We'll see you in a little bit on Bandwagon Nerds. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been Four Corners Addendum on the Chair Shot Radio Network, part of the ChairShot.com.